Welcome to the Field Goals Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz. The Seattle Seahawks on Sunday Night Football come away from Arizona with just their second loss since Russell Wilson was quarterback, going all the way back to his rookie game. We see Russell Wilson throw an interception in overtime that gives the ball back to the Arizona Cardinals. They're able to get in field goal range and come away with a 37-34 win. And joining me to talk about it is Nathan Santo from the Seahawks Nest. Nathan, you know, it's one thing doing these shows with guests every week. I'm disappointed when I bring a guest on and they have to talk about a loss with me. So I appreciate you showing up, and I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just going to say, I think that in the realm of guests that you could have had for a loss, you know, I think that in the Seahawks podcast/blogging community, there's a lot of people who are very prone to, let's say, negativity. Let's just use that word.
Sure.
And I think, like, on the spectrum of people you could have brought, it might be good that you brought me, because I'm relentless in how I try to spin everything into a positive, or at least keep like a positive mindset about it, you know?
Right.
So I mean, maybe it's fortuitous, you know.
maybe it worked out for the best. That way people don't have to, although I feel like in a game like this, though, Nathan, there's going to be a lot of people that are very upset with the defense in particular, very upset with the Seahawks. The fact that they were, gosh, when you look at the fourth quarter, Seahawks looked like in control. Holy crap, Nathan, that just occurred to me that this is the one time that the Seahawks have now lost being up by 4 points in going into the second half. That streak has ended at what, like 59, 60 games.
Yeah, the Russell Wilson, all his crazy streaks of like leading by four or keeping games within a touchdown, like slowly those have fallen over the years. And this is one of the last like monoliths, you know, the half four grader halftime point lead, never blown it. Now it is finally ended. Does he have any of those left? Any of those like crazy stats?
Ooh.
Because I know that there was the one where it was like every game was within a touchdown, right? That he had that one for super long. Do you remember that one? And then
and then they got blown out by, well, there was the one game where they really got blown out by the Rams by more than, you know, 20, 30 points or something like
that. Yeah.
Wait, let's not look back to other bad times.
But I'm just saying, like,
let's focus on this bad time.
But let's just look at this, though. The streaks that happen like this, they don't happen because Russell Wilson sucks. They happen because he's really, really freaking good. And I'm a realist, so I'm not going to beat around the bush. This loss sucked. You know, it was hard. It felt like sometimes we were playing 15 on 11 because some of these referee calls were pretty tough, and some of them really changed like the whole. I felt like the whole game hinged on one referee call, and if that call was better, that we would have won the game by 10 points.
Let me see if I can guess which one it is. Because I think I know it.
I thought, okay, so there's a lot of things you can complain about with the refereeing, okay? But I think this one was by far the most egregious and had the biggest impact on the game. So go ahead, what do you think it is?
The third and five with Arizona down on their own 12-yard line, and Bobby Wagner was called for unnecessary roughness hitting the tight end in the back.
Absolutely. 100%. You nailed it.
Okay.
It was the worst call. One, it's a bad call. Two, it extended a drive that turned into a touchdown and was a really long drive too. Like, they had to go so far and they got a touchdown on that drive. That's just a tough play. And then on that like same drive, I think it was the next play, or it was either one play before, one play after. I can't remember. That's the play Shaquille Griffin goes down with the concussion.
Right.
And that had a huge impact on the game too, because I don't know what Ken Norton's deal is with the Trey Flowers is going to line up 10 yards off of the wide receiver no matter what. I mean, you can't concede 9 yards over and over again and expect to stop a team from scoring in these these are leverage situations where they only need 3 points. You just can't give up 9 yards over and over. They're going to score if you do that. They only need 3 points. And those are incredibly frustrating.
Well, there was a couple different ways that Ken Norton and the defense approached this game that was, I think, worth discussing. And that is, you hit on one with Trey Flowers. The other one was the decision in a lot of cases early on in the game and then late in the game to just rush three players and have Shaquem Griffin drop back and spy the quarterback. And it seemed like an effective strategy going into halftime, up 10 points, that seemed to work well. They were going to make Kyler Murray beat them from the pocket. And with absolutely no pressure on three players, it worked to some extent. But then again, they ended up losing the game.
Okay, but I mean, what's your goal? Is your goal to give up 17 points a half? Because that's what they did. They gave up 17 in the first half and 17 in the second half. And if that's your goal, like if you say like, okay, we're going to rush three, we're going to play a really conservative defense, and we're going to give up 34 regulation points.
Right.
So you're saying our offense has to score 35. I mean, that's tough. That's a big ask. And to be honest, Russ didn't totally have it today. I mean, some of those interceptions were some of the worst throws I've seen him throw in the uniform. You know, like those interceptions were tough. They were not pretty throws. And a couple of them didn't bite us in the butt. You know, DK saves the touchdown and then they end up not converting on fourth down. Doesn't bite us as it should, but that throw was terrible. And then they threw the other one. They threw the interception right back. So it doesn't.
Patrick Peterson caught it in the end zone, and then Kyler Murray turned right around and threw it to Diggs.
So I mean, those don't bite us, but those were not great throws, and it kind of speaks to like a greater thing where we just didn't. The offense was good today, really good, but it didn't totally have it. It wasn't dominant like it's been at some points this season. I think Russ had an 84 QB rating in this game, which was his lowest of the season by a pretty significant margin. And actually, he's gone down in every single game since the first game, which is a concerning pattern. Although I think it was a little bit just above curve performance that if this defense was even just a little bit better leads to a win, but that was not the case. The defense just, I think that we all expected the defense to play better because they were going to have some new players this week, right? Or players coming back, and only one of the three players that we expected to be there was actually there. Right.
Right.
So we expected Dunbar and Adams.
Well, and Brooks.
And Harrison. I guess Brooks, Brooks came back. And Brooks did play good. He had a big tackle down on the goal line. He played a pretty decent football game. And he's one of the guys that I thought might be important in this game because he's good at tracking quarterbacks on the run.
If I would have maybe had to do it over again, I think it would have been more interesting to see Jordan Brooks take on that role that we saw Shaquem Griffin playing more so, and have him be more of the spy on the quarterback. Because the one thing about that approach is I felt like Shaquem, when he had opportunities to be aggressive, he was really slow at taking advantage of them. So whereas I think with Jordan Brooks, I think his speed and his, you know, just looking back at his college tape too, he commits, I think, a lot better than Shaquem Griffin does.
He's decisive. He gets downhill. But it's the kind of thing like, we have a bunch of players that could have played that role, but maybe Brooks is too coming back off the injuries a little. Maybe they were scared, you know, you don't want him to re-injure himself. Adams could play that role really well, right, and he is not available. Marquise Blair probably would have been really good at that role too. He is unavailable.
Yeah, you're naming all the injured guys.
It's just like this defense is playing bad, but there's personnel that could help a lot that is just unavailable right now. Yeah. And it's a combination of just injuries and a lack of a like good game plan. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating. Ryan Neal has been a revelation, and it's still not enough to like really push us in the right direction. This defense.
Well, and the thing is, Nathan, with this defense, if you would have told me that with 6 minutes, 50 seconds in the game, the Seahawks score a touchdown and they're up by 10 points and giving it back to Kyler Murray with just, you know, 6:45 left to go in the game, I think I would have been okay with that idea. I would have thought, okay, well, the defense should be able to do enough. If they've only allowed 24 points up until 6 minutes left in the game, they should be able to shut down Kyler Murray with that amount of time left. And let's kind of go through that sequence a little bit because, well, that touchdown to Tyler Lockett to put the Seahawks at 34, that was a really weird sequence altogether because Russell Wilson hits Lockett in the back of the end zone. And it's another one of those plays like we saw from Russ to Lockett against the Rams, where he throws it to the back of the end zone. And you think, gosh, did Tyler get his feet in? And initially, the referees call it a touchdown, and then they change the call, even though knowing that all scoring plays are reviewed, they change the call on the field to say it was an incomplete pass, and then they make Pete Carroll challenge it. Thankfully, the Seahawks had one timeout left. They had already burned two timeouts in the half, so fortunately, still had one timeout for that challenge.
Yeah, what a catch too. I mean, just a great catch by Lockett. Lockett awesome in this game. 20 targeted 20 times, 15 receptions, 200 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's an absurd line for Tyler in this game. And just one that if you picked him in your daily fantasy contest, you're probably doing backflips because that is insane. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, we had losing those timeouts in the half like that, that's a classic like Pete Carroll thing, like Seahawks thing, like just randomly losing timeouts for no reason. And it's not like we needed them in this game, but
right. But could you imagine if they had burned that third timeout somewhere and right. an officiating call like that turned around that way when all they had to do was allow the touchdown as called initially and then review it in the booth. It was a weird sequence of events. And fortunately, it worked out for the team. But yeah, being up 10 points with 6 minutes, 50 seconds to go, I think the other play that we need to talk about is one that followed that. And Nathan, let's get to that one coming up after the break. Talking to Nathan Santo of the Seahawks Nest and breaking down this game with the Arizona Cardinals. Looking to the fourth quarter, the Seahawks score to go ahead 34-24, and just a little over 6 minutes left in the game, the Cardinals able to drive down the field relatively easily. They only had to convert two third and ones. Well, they didn't convert the one third and one, but they did get it on fourth and one with a Kenyon Drake run up the middle. That was the play that he ended up getting injured on. They convert the next third and one, but then they get into a third and 12 and decide to kick the field goal. But then Benson Mayoa was not only called for defensive offsides, he was called for unsportsmanlike conduct for using leverage to try and get up and over the offensive lineman into the backfield. And I look back at that, and that's so unnecessary. Like, just make him kick the field goal, and you have 2.5 minutes left, you get the ball back, and you're still up a touchdown.
I think like what happened on that play, though, is like Mayoa goes offsides, right?
Right.
And so no one's moving. And then he just panicked. Like, he panics and he doesn't, like, it's like he's like, okay, what do I do? You know, and he could just run guys over or whatever, but he decides like I'm gonna go over these guys, and yeah. which is what you don't do on these plays. And so then when he puts his, once you put your hands on guys' backs, like the refs are gonna throw a flag. It's just like that's the way they enforce the rule, you know? So yeah, that sucked. Sucked really bad.
And I guess it would have been 3 minutes left in the game because they use just two plays. They get in the end zone and 2.5 minutes left. So I just feel like being down a touchdown in that situation is a lot different than a field goal. Well, for one, then the Seahawks, even if they do end up doing the same type of sequence where they make the Cardinals use all their timeouts, then you're making them drive the field for a touchdown rather than drive the field to try and get into field goal range to tie it up at the end of the game.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, I want to talk to you about something that happened after this, actually. Okay, so Seahawks have the ball, first and 10 on the 20. They're on 26, 1:54 to go, right? Carlos Hyde gets a first down. They call their second timeout. Then we just run it, like, or they call their first timeout. Then we run it three straight times, okay?
Right.
I don't know.
On second and 9, it was a successful play because they got 7 yards, and that was the run that made them use their third timeout. But on 3rd and 2, with 1:42, they decide to run it on 3rd and 2. And that, it does allow more time to come off the clock if the run isn't successful. But at the same time, if you throw in that situation, then to me, this is what makes such a big difference. If the Cardinals are down by 7, I don't think you are that concerned about one going for it and trying to run out the clock some more, or kicking it back to them and making them go the length of the field rather than trying to get into field goal range.
Right. Being only down by 3, I don't know. Like, they don't have to go that far. And the way we're playing defense, where we're willing to give up a 10 yard catch on every play right. for some reason, I'm not 100% sure. Like, you've got to put the ball in Russell Wilson's hands on 3rd and 2 there and say like, okay, if something bad happens, just eat the sack and run the time off the clock. Dixon can still kick it really far, right? I don't think the field position would have been that different. He kicked it into the end zone. They got it on the 20, right? Yeah. So it's not going to be a huge, huge difference. And so I'm a little disappointed they decided not to put the ball in Russ's hands and let him try to win us the game right there.
Right on 3rd and 2. Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism.
And it's the kind of decision making, like it feels like we fell back into like an old habit there. Like the new habit is like, let Russ try to win the game, make sure that the ball is in his hands when it matters the most. Right. And then that running off right tackle on third and two with Carlos Hyde gave me a flashback to like Dallas playoffs, you know, where it's just like, why let Russ win us the game. You know, don't put us in the position where Carlos Hyde is winning us the game. Right. So that was frustrating for me. That play was almost as frustrating as anything else. And then of course, you know, we punt, they give up a bunch of like 10 yard plays because we're playing the world's softest zone defense. And then, and then Zane Gonzalez kicks the field goal to send it to overtime. And at that point, I'm still supremely confident. Do you know why? Because we've got the coin flip God himself right. coming out to the field, and he won the coin flip again. I could not believe it. I wish I could bet on like Geno Smith just flipping coins or something, because this guy is like incredible at winning coin flips. So then I'm thinking, all right, well, there's no way we can lose now. And of course, we give up our first sack of the game in the opening drive there, and I start feeling the existential dread creeping.
Yeah, and the first sack wasn't really that consequential because it was on second and two. It was a 6-yard sack, and then he hits David Moore on third and eight to keep the drive going. But then Carlos Hyde,
that run, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like I was like, man, maybe he should have just like thrown it to not.
You know, I always have this thought, but you have to think on running plays that some linemen are going to be blocking downfield. And so if you throw it, then you take a penalty in that situation. And I don't know, maybe the penalty would be better because you're than taking a 6-yard loss, right? Because then it'd still be first down.
There was nowhere for him to go on that play. And it's just total bust. And then we get the third and six, and then Shell gets the false start. And that was like an Effetti flashback right there.
It was.
Russ takes the 10-yard sack. Kick it back, give them great field position. They get a bunch of yards, but then Zane Gonzalez miraculously misses the field goal. And
that was after the Cardinals iced their own kicker.
Yeah, exactly. They had to.
The play clock was down to zero, and he did get a chance to kick it. Anyway, he missed it. It wasn't that big of a deal.
Russ throws another interception that I think is highly questionable, and this one did cost us because it gave the Cardinals really good field position and made it really easy for them to just, you know, putz their way into field goal range with some Chase Edmonds runs. And
that interception, Nathan, came right after the play where we thought that the Seahawks had won it because DK Metcalf catches the screen pass, runs 48 yards for the touchdown. And yet it's brought back by a David Moore offensive holding. It was a legit holding call.
Yes.
But I don't know if David Moore needed to do it. I think that DK can break a tackle like that and still make that run to the end zone.
Moore just needs to get into his chest, you know, and just push. Like he don't worry about you're a wide receiver, you know, you don't need to be holding a block. Like just try to affect the guy. And then if you can't do it, then let DK try to break the tackle. Like, you're exactly right. Like if he can just push him a little bit so he's out of the way, great. And if you can't, whatever. I feel like he didn't need to he made too much of an effort to be like an offensive tackle on that play, which, all right, whatever. David Moore had some good plays in this game, so I can't rag on him too hard for that. I mean, he was part of the reason we were even in the game.
Right. Yeah. He had some crucial catches in this game, and then the interception to Lockett. We can talk about that a little bit more. This is what I was watching Mark Schofield this week. He did a breakdown of one of the things that the Cardinals have been doing so far this season. And that's doing a 0-6-5 formation where they don't have any down linemen in the game. They have six linebackers. Isaiah Simmons was on the field in this situation, and they really like to do this in third and long where they put all the linebackers up near, you know, up in the box to make it look like they could potentially blitz. And then you see Isaiah Simmons drop back and cover the middle of the field in a lot of these, and Russ threw it just right to Simmons. I don't know if he was expecting Tyler Lockett to be looking for that pass a little bit earlier. He wasn't. That was the one consequential interception that you pointed out and gave the Cardinals the opportunity to go for the win.
Yep. And then, yeah, they had the short field, you know, they start their drive on our 49. Right. And then they were able to use that momentum to just get the, you know, whatever they needed, 19 extra yards. And this time Zane Gonzalez did not miss.
No.
If you would have told me before the game, like, hey, this is a tough 4-game stretch and they're going to go 2-2 in that stretch, I'd probably go, that's fine. Well, I'll take it because the end of the schedule is pretty easy. right?
Right.
And I might even say like we could lose three of these four games and still have a relatively clear path to the one seed if we can get hot again at the end of the season.
Sure.
But the problem is that this was an eminently winnable game, and it changes it in my head. You know, it's like, yeah, if you just tell me, hey, you're going to go 2-2, you'll lose to Arizona and you'll lose to San Francisco, or you'll lose to the Bills. It's like, okay, fine. It sucks, but 2-2 is probably good enough. It's the toughest stretch of the schedule. Now though, when we lost like that though, it's like, oh man, we could have gone 3-1, you know. It's going to be in the back of my head. Like, that was close. We could have had that game, and it was a combination. There was bad calls that went against us, a combination of bad calls and little mistakes that kind of all added up to a close loss.
Yeah. And you're talking about the next four games. I was looking at it more in terms of the next five games, because I think 3-2 would be okay. And I know going into this stretch, that was kind of in my mind is, yeah, that would be acceptable. But now they have to go 3-1 over the next four games
to get to that 3-2. And it,
right.
You know, when you lose the close one, if we end up going 2-3 over the stretch, you're going to look back and say, well, that was the one we should have had to go 3-2, right? Especially if at the end we get to the end and, you know, Tampa Bay doesn't lose again and we barely miss out on the one seed, you're going to look back to that game when we're, you know, 12-4 and they're 13-3, and we're going to go, oh man, that was the one where we could have taken that one seed and gotten that bye, extra week to get healthy, all that. Because I mean, there's parts of our schedule at Eagles, at home for Giants, home for Jets, at Washington, that's pretty easy. That should be 4-0. And so there's still these parts of our schedule that are just so good. But a lot of divisional games, those are hard. They're always weird. Our division is very good this year. And I think the Bills are fraudulent, but other people think they're good. The Seahawks aren't going to lose on my birthday. It's just not going to happen.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we can count on that. Mark that down as a win. It's 100% victory. The Seahawks don't lose on Nathan's birthday.
That's kind of going to happen. It can't happen. That would just be too much to bear.
See, I wanted to look at this game, though, and have this be the one where I look back at that play that DK Metcalf made to run down Buda Baker on the pick six.
Oh, my gosh. What a play.
To look back at that play and say that was the play that won this game for the Seahawks, because that play by DK Metcalf, I don't think it could be understated how incredible that is. The speed that he had to run down Baker and to make that tackle before he got to the end zone, it was incredible.
Second fastest defensive run, top speed in the league this year for on a tackle, DK Metcalf.
He's not supposed to be making defensive plays. DK Metcalf is not supposed to be the Seahawks' best defensive player.
Hey, first place is a Seahawk, though, for defensive tacklers. It was Shaquille Griffin.
Oh,
hey. was the fastest defensive player of the year so far. The thing about that play, too, is that I wrote down this note. I said, did Buda Baker turn around to wave or to try to stiff arm DK and then change his mind? I can't decide either. I feel like he was going to turn around to taunt, but then realize someone was coming.
No, I think he probably looked up at the screen and, you know, it's kind of one of those things where objects in the mirror are closer than they actually appear. And he thought that DK may have been a little bit closer than he was and turned around just a little too early. And then
you think he was going to try to stiff arm DK Metcalf? That seems like a horrible idea.
It seems like a bad idea, but he also, I don't think, wanted to get the ball popped out of his hands either.
Yeah. If that play is going to be on DK's highlight reel for the rest of his career, it's kind of the reverse of the getting the ball punched out behind him. Right.
Right.
It's why we love DK. He's a full effort guy. Even if he does make some kind of like youngster mistakes right now, he's 110% all the time. You know what I mean?
Put that play up with the Earl Thomas chopping the ball out of the Rams running back's hands at the goal line. I think it's on par with that.
The best part of that run, too, is like when he catches up to Russ and then passes him, and you can see Russ when DK goes by and be like, all right, I can stop running now. That guy is way faster than me. It's like you could definitely tell he's like, all right, I don't have to run because DK's got this one, or he's going to get it better than I could.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's a real like 2018 Chiefs vibe with this Seahawks team. Mm. We have the quarterback who's playing the best in the league. We have a defense that is not good.
Right.
We have really good special teams. Myers is kicking really well. I know on my podcast, I like to joke all the time that he's automatic, but he really is kicking super good. Has he missed anything yet this year?
No. Well, he's hardly had a chance to miss anything.
Extra points. He's making all those too. Oh, yeah. Maybe. Automatic. So then Otto Myers, sorry. And then, I mean, Dixon's back and rounded back into like top form. And it just feels like the special teams is playing really good, but this defense is going to, we'll sink or swim by how good this defense can be. If Jamal and Snacks can come in and make it so that, you know, this is a better defense. If Shaquille is not, the concussion's not too bad, because that could hurt a lot too.
Yeah.
If that concussion keeps him out multiple weeks, the thing that's tough is the way we play defense, right? With the secondary and these guys passing guys off to each other with the zone defense, they need to play together to really communicate like that. Like Shaquille in this game passed a guy off to nobody.
Oh, right. Like on the one touchdown in the back of the end zone.
Yeah, that happened in this game. And it's like plays like that don't happen if the guys play a lot together, because they'll know, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They'll know the tendencies of the guys they're playing with, but they just have not played a ton together. I mean, even Diggs last year was hurt a lot, right? So his time with these guys, we've never had the full retinue. There was no preseason. There was less training camp. It's just, it was a tall order. And I think that to build your defense around the secondary, like the Seahawks did, it would have helped a lot to have more just game time with everyone together and healthy. And so I'm nervous, I guess. I don't know. I want everyone to get healthy and those guys to start playing together before the playoffs.
Yeah. Shaquille Griffin has to be a part of the secondary now, unfortunately, because we see what, man, I was really rooting for Trey Flowers to try and come back this season. I would almost rather have Ugo Amadi playing outside. I know he isn't the traditional prototype corner that for Pete Carroll's defense, but I think Ugo Amadi would be a better outside corner than Trey Flowers right now.
I think Ryan Neal would too. That's my sleeper for like guy that could challenge Trey once. I think they're going to try to find ways to get Ryan Neal onto the field.
Sure.
When Jamal is back. And I think that that's a way they can do it, is play him some at corner.
I think having Ryan Neal as the slot corner and having Ugo outside, if Shaquille Griffin can't play, I would take that and have that be your nickel defense.
Right. Flexible pieces too. Like that, I think that they want to have flexible pieces. That was their goal, right? Yeah. Is to have guys that could kind of, that's why Blair was playing corner and some corner and some safety, right? So that guys could come out and they could be flexible in where they put them so that they could kind of trick quarterbacks into making mistakes. And it is working. Like we're getting interceptions. We're still creating turnovers, but not enough in this game. We maybe needed one more. Yeah.
Puna Ford with the forced fumble. Got to call out Puna with the nice forced fumble.
I think that defensive line is not as bad as maybe people expected, but they're not finishing any sacks.
I can't fault the Seahawks necessarily for the game plan, because I thought the idea of making Kyler beat you throwing from the pocket would be the way to go. And that is ultimately, that was what they were able to beat the Seahawks doing.
It was working until Griffin got hurt. Let's be honest. I mean, I think if Griffin doesn't get hurt, it changes like I said, there was like a series of two or three plays right there where Wagner gets the penalty and then Griffin goes out with the concussion, that the whole game just kind of went in the toilet bowl. They started circling the toilet bowl at that point, right? Like that was when the flush happened, and then it was just not all downhill from there. Cause that, I mean, that's just tough. It's tough to lose your top corner, even if, I mean, I think there's some discussion in the Seahawks community. Is Shaquille Griffin a true number one corner? And I think that's a fair question to ask. He's up and down a little bit, but I mean, there's no doubt he's the best cornerback on this team.
Sure.
or he's at least as good as Dunbar. He's important to the team. And when we go from Griffin or Dunbar to Flowers, it's a big drop off right now, a really big drop off. And I don't know what happened to Flowers. It's so weird, because every year he seems to get worse. It's like the reverse that you would expect. And I don't know if that's like, there's a book on him now. It's just, this is how you beat Trey Flowers.
Well, but and you know, every year he gets worse. So this is his third season, right? So, I mean, the first is rookie season. There wasn't a ton of expectations. He was making a position change from safety to corner. And then second year, you expect a guy to have maybe a little sophomore slump. And so this was the year that I was thinking that he would bounce back. And I don't know if it was the trade for Quentin Dunbar that, you know, got to him mentally or what's going on, but he just doesn't seem to be. Yeah. I don't even think we have 2019 Trey Flowers out there right now.
He went from 64 PFF rating his rookie year on like a full snap count, right? He was the number two cornerback. Then his second year, he went down to 49.5. And this year so far, not including this game, which I'm sure is going to hurt him even more.
Yeah.
He's at 38.2 Pro Football Focus rating, right, which is pretty bad. And I don't know. I mean, the position conversion, maybe it just didn't work. It didn't work quite the way they wanted it to. He seems fast enough. He ran a 4.45. I don't understand why they have him playing so not physical. You know, he seems to be so far off the ball and playing this non-physical brand of football. Like, just, I know Hopkins is probably not the guy you want to try to beat up at the line of scrimmage, but I think it's better than just giving him a 9-yard catch on every play.
Right.
Just conceding that this is a free play. You can go to the sideline 9 yards down the field and just have this one.
Well, yeah. And when you give Kyler Murray, you know, when you only rush three, he's going to have enough time to drop back, hit his back foot and just throw to the sideline and get those 9 yards.
Yeah, just soft at the end. It's tough. It's a tough loss. It's like we said, it's a winnable game that they just kind of we needed just one little thing to go our way. You know, there's so many points where one play different would have made a huge difference.
Well, the Seahawks have had so many games like this where it does go their way. It's bound to bite them at some point. And, you know, you look at the stat line and Russell Wilson for this game, 388 yards, 3 touchdowns. We talked about the 3 interceptions being a problem. But you on the ground too, 84 rushing yards in this game, and he was making a difference on the ground. Unfortunately, Chris Carson went out with a foot injury in this game. Hopefully, he comes back soon. Carlos Hyde, 4.5 yards per carry. I think that's about what I would have hoped for from Carlos Hyde.
One little thing at the end of the game, so we've seen in the past couple weeks, Travis Homer has been very good in pass protection, kind of like an unsung hero at the end of these drives in these close games where they put Homer out there and he's not out there to run. He's out there to block, you know, he's out there to block. And instead of Homer at the end of this game, because Homer had a knee contusion, that's right. What Pete said in the post game,
which contusion is a fancy word for bruise.
DJ Dallas was in the game. And I'm just going to say, DJ Dallas, you are Travis Homer is the block god. He is awesome. He gets in there. He's a little guy, but he is full effort and he does a good job. DJ Dallas was not Travis Homer at the end of this game. And that did make it just another injury that made a big difference. It's like a little thing. There was one play where DJ Dallas slid over behind the guards and a guy came right past him and tackled Russ. And it's like, dude, you could have had that one. No problem. Homer would have had that one.
Yeah.
He would have been all over that play. And it's just, that's the kind of stuff where running back depth is going to be an issue if Penny's not coming back soon and Carson's injury is serious and this Homer thing turns into a real thing. Now we're down to Hyde, Dallas, and I don't know. It's dire straits after that, I think.
Right, yeah. Who's your practice squad running back at this point?
Oh, do you want me to look it up right now?
No, we don't need it. It's not that important.
And you know what, though? At the end of the day, we still have the best quarterback in the league, or at least like top three, depending on who you ask. And it's going to be, you know, we're still going to be in the playoffs. We're still going to be a tough out. I'm excited about every week of Seahawks football still. Tough loss, but we'll get after it. I'm not worried.
A tough loss. And I'm glad you're able to bring some optimism to the show, Nathan. So if people want to check out the Seahawks Nest this week and get some more of that optimism, or unless you change your mind and really go negative after rewatching this game, I don't know how that generally goes for you. But where should they go to check it out?
Yeah, you can head over to, you can find us on Twitter, at Seahawks Nest, just Seahawks Nest, wherever you find your podcasts. And we have a website. It's punthub.us. You'll see, it's like a joke.
punthub.us. Is this a new thing?
But if you're a big Michael Dixon fan, this is going to be like a website that really appeals to you. It's a gag, you know, like you'll see when you go to it.
Check out punthub.us. Check out fieldgoals.com. Russell Wilson, there's an article up with Russell breaking Matt Hasselbeck's record for completions that happened in this game. Some injury updates there, too. And if you want to comment on the loss, you can go to the game thread from Mookie Alexander. It's all up there. Fieldgoals.com. Subscribe to this show. SBNation.com/NFL podcasts. And with that, let's get on out of here, Nathan. Go Hawks.